CliffCentral.com.
All right, we're back. We're live. Let's do this thing. Good morning, everybody. CliffCentral.com on a, Friday morning. Sure. Look at how this week has gone. So there's lots to talk about today. There's lots to get into, Sia and Leanne and I, and we've got George Meany joining us later on. We've also got an interesting guest who's going to be joining us, someone called Reza Mia, who has invented something called the Pegasus Vertical Business Jet. It's a proper South African innovation. Yeah. I know. It's a hell of a thing, right?
Your class is improving.
We're going to find out all about this thing. It's a really interesting development in business flight, and I think lots of people will be excited to hear about it. So that's coming up in a short while. Just because we like to check on these things, thanks to Sean Saunders. Bitcoin, $55,809 this morning. It was at $57,000 yesterday. It's jumping around like you cannot believe at the moment. Madness. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just wrap up the conversation we were having before in the first hour. Was about like Bill and Melinda Gates and rich people and divorces and poor people and divorces and ordinary people and divorces. So apparently Bill is taking a secret trip ahead of his divorce, and this has got the whole family furious. What do we know about this?
So he actually – that's not the truth.
Oh.
It's actually the other way around. So before the divorce, Melinda and Bill wanted to take the whole family and like extended family as well to an island. And the story is that they wanted to make the announcement to everyone on this island.
Right.
Why an island? Because they didn't want the media getting access to these people if, straight after the announcement. They were trying to keep it as contained as they could. So it was apparently Melinda herself who rented, I don't know how to pronounce this, Kalivani Island in
Which
Granada.
Island?
Where is it?
It's in Granada.
You see, now we've got to look it up because it's probably really fantastic if she could afford it. So just spell it for us. We want to look this place up.
C-A-L.
Right.
I-V-I.
Yeah.
G-N-Y. She rented the entire island.
Oh, my God.
For $132 a night.
Uh-huh.
$132,000.
$132,000.
I'm going to.
Pretty sure. $132, we can even do that.
That's terrific.
So the plan was for Melinda and the kids and their significant others. So that's where the extended family comes in, to go to the island. Everyone except Bill.
Oh, Jesus.
So apparently everyone in the family already knew that Bill and Melinda were divorcing, and there are also many stories which say that this was on the cards for a long time. You know, there was obviously a considerable amount of acrimony associated with the split, and apparently everyone in the family took Melinda's side.
Ooh.
Apparently they were all very angry at Bill, and that's why he wasn't invited. So the reason for going to the island was that so no one from the media could reach them and ask them about the split when it was announced during their stay. But the lawyers for both Bill and Melinda were trying to hash out a divorce settlement. There were still outstanding issues that couldn't be resolved at the time of the trip. So Melinda decided to go anyway with everyone but Bill.
Sure.
So apparently some sources are saying that this was not a friendly split. TMZ, which is one of the rumor channels, which I actually carries a little bit of gravitas for me because a lot of things, they've often been the ones to break the news and in the right way and the true news. So TMZ were told that Melinda and most of the family were furious at Bill for various things that they claimed that he had done.
Let me just show you this island. Look at this. Looks pretty, pretty good. Huh?
So what's interesting is that would have been for Melinda. They've got three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the three significant kids others. So that would have been for seven of them.
Seven people on that beautiful island. Well, listen, I mean, nice if you can have it. Good for them. Anyway, I just think that, you know, there's a classy way to do divorce. And I think she was maybe trying it. And obviously there's just a lot of hard feelings with Bill. So who knows what the hell happened there. We will see. It all comes out in the wash. Mm. By the way, Sia has fallen in love with a woman. Yeah. Well, he's kind of
catching. I nearly spat out my water.
He's kind of, maybe that.
Rephrase it, please.
That psychic was right. The Sia's gonna. He's found a dream woman. Well, I mean, she's stealing his heart, and he thinks she's pretty fabulous. But I don't think he's necessarily going to change his mind and suddenly start dating women. So let's have a look. Who is this person? Here she is, Sia's secret crush.
She is. Oh, goodbye, Queen Elizabeth. Goodbye, Meghan Markle with the sparkle.
Uh-huh.
We are now enwrapped in the splendor, the glamour, the beauty of the Japanese former Empress Michiko.
The former Empress or the current? Ooh. Oh, the old lady. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Look at her.
Oh, wow.
She was married to Emperor Akihito, right? She was married to Emperor Akihito. She's the former Empress. She's the Dowager Empress.
I don't know how I discovered her yesterday, but I have been stuck on a Google rabbit hole of notes. Every single outfit of hers is so unnecessary, but still so necessary. It's just over the top. She's fabulous.
Wow. Okay, well,
wow.
I must be honest with you. I've never really paid a huge amount of attention to Empress Michiko, but she does look fantastic. I mean, She's definitely, listen, there's something, I know this is a huge generalization, but there's something about the whole Japanese way of doing everything that is so goddamned appealing. You know, they everything they do beautifully. They are, everything's a ritual. I know this is what like some idiot Westerner or some idiot South African would say. And there are probably Japanese people who will not fulfill any of these criteria, and they're still as Japanese as can be. But I just get this impression, like, the Japanese have such a respectful, thoughtful, careful, meaningful way of doing everything they do. And maybe I'm just, you know, I've got this fantasy in my head about how Japanese people really are and how their culture works. Maybe it's not at all like that. But in my head, they are one of the nations, again, it's a huge stereotype, but they're one of the nations that just seem to get things right. You know, like the Italians craft beautiful things and the French are sophisticated, and the Japanese are just extraordinary to me. Maybe I've got to go there and see it for myself before I can comment effectively on this. But if she's any kind of representation of it, I totally understand what you mean, Sia. Such dignity, such grace, such elegance, you know, everything's right.
She loves poetry.
Yeah.
She plays the piano.
Of course she does. Yeah.
Right? She hardly says anything. And then you just see her with these gorgeous outfits. I'm taken. But, absolutely smitten.
But see, how much of it is just the outfits?
clearly everything. She doesn't say anything or do anything. All she's doing is wearing these outfits and being shaded by other people with these gorgeous Japanese parasols. That's all she's doing.
Well, I mean,
going out to buy milk in an outfit like this.
But she does, the point is, she doesn't go out and buy milk. So she dresses up like that for some state occasion. Sia, do you know who my crush is in terms of her outfits, her look and everything else? Is Mel B from the Spice Girls. I mean, I've always thought she was the most magnificent. I've always looked up to her as the paragon.
What the hell is that?
It's Mel B from the Spice Girls.
the Muppet version.
one more time, please. What was that?
Hello, it's me, Mel B, from the Spice Girls. Scary Spice. Ooh.
That's her. Lord. You don't know her?
Jesus, that's bad.
Oh, man. All right, listen. Interesting stories that are in the news this morning, and this is a frightening story. They found a woman who has been missing for, months now. It's what, how many months? November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. Well, May now. So it's almost 5 months that she's been missing. November 2020, she went disappeared somewhere. She's been living in a tent in Utah. She's been in a canyon eating moss and grass. Like a primitive person, like a forager. What the hell's going on with people?
So they are still trying to figure out what exactly is going on with this woman. She's 47 years old. Her identity has not been revealed.
Here
just because there's so much investigation going into the story.
I found a picture of her. Here she is. It's me, Mel B. Oh, Scary Spice. That's her.
It seems like she willingly has been living in this forest. And that is why she had a tent. She was all set up. And she was quite content eating grass and moss.
Was she?
The only people who...
Was she pissed, uh-huh. Was she pissed off when they found her? She was like, leave me alone, I'm fine.
I don't know that part. Her family and friends are the ones who've now also informed the police that she's lost a significant amount of weight. But it was from November last year where she just vanished off the face of the earth. And it was recently when someone was just flying a drone in the area. It crashed and fell. And so they went to go and search for it in that area and stumbled upon this 47-year-old woman. I kind of feel like they should let her be then. If this is what she wants, so then go right ahead.
So, Leanne, she's just a bit older than us. And I know you've had fantasies since you were 24, 25, of just going off into the wilderness and living somewhere simple with animals. And, you know, you've always wanted to be on a farm or maybe out in the wilderness. This could be your story. And, I mean, I'm also a bit of a hermit sometimes. So that there's this part of me that wants to go off to, you know, be left alone in a log cabin in the woods for the rest of my life. I don't think this is it's not such an unattractive proposition, you know.
It was 15 years earlier than that, actually, when I was on a family holiday and we were trekking in the Drakensberg and came across the grotto, which is a cave where a man famously lived as a hermit for many years. In this cave that was on the edge of the water. And all you could hear was this water dripping in this very shaded forest area with ferns. And he lived there for his whole life, lived and died there.
Wow.
And that's when it became appealing to me when I was not even 10 years old.
You know, maybe it's just too many movies of like seeing these people in this. Here's a word for you, Sia. Are you ready? Bucolic. People in this bucolic splendor where they kind of just, you know, they're surrounded by nature and natural beauty and they rely on the land and they live off a little stream, a crystal clear stream that flows through the mountains. And, you know, they pick things and they eat them and they manage to forage for fruit and vegetables, and they grow their own stuff up in the mountain. No one ever finds them. It's a bit of a fantasy thing. It's like I vacillate between being totally like a hermit and not wanting anything to do with people, and then suddenly going, I need a bunch of people around me now. And it's probably the degree is probably about one of those days where I need people to 7 days where I really would like to be the hermit. But I can't say for sure I'm one or the other. I definitely go between the two. I mean, like,
for this woman, right now, today,
today I could be, you could leave me alone today. It's like a slightly cold, overcast morning. You know, I woke up late because I was having such a fat sleep today. I just need the minimum of human interaction today. But there's going to be a day in the next 5 or 6 where I'm going to go, shit, I really need to see people.
I never reached that point.
You don't, huh? You always use, you're on the hermit side 24/7.
Yeah, definitely. I took my aunt. We rotate as all of the cousins, but I took my aunt grocery shopping on the weekend, and for some reason she wanted to go to a mall. And that was because she'd ordered wool from a specific shop. She does this beautiful crocheting and actually makes a living out of it. But we went into this mall. It was month end. It was packed. There was not even parking. It was ridiculous. And I went on and on with this escapade for about an hour until eventually I lost it.
Wow.
I said to her, look, I'm going to the car. I'll meet you at the car. But she was at a different shop, so I had to drive to this other shop.
But Leanne, I understand that post-corona, because I find I'm the same. I don't like being in shopping centers or malls. But that, but you weren't hermity before corona.
I only ever go out if I have to. But this time in particular, I said to her, I don't understand why we can't just buy your stuff online. It's driving me mad doing this thing every month. And she said, but I actually like to get out once a month. And I felt so bad after that, and I thought I hadn't taken her into consideration at all in terms of that.
Well, I mean, Sia, you're the opposite, right? I mean, like, you are pretty much constantly set to people, although you also have a bit of a loner side going on. I think we've lost Sia.
But you see, Sia likes his alone time.
Sia, sorry, did we
interrupt? Sia likes his alone time, baths and things.
Did we interrupt your alone time?
Yes. No, I don't know. I like being alone on my terms.
Right.
And when I also need people, I need to have them. I can't go too long without people. That's why at least once a day I have one extended phone call with someone, just at least like to have that connection. But if it's about leaving the house, I'm quite content being indoors, but I still need a bit of that connection. So I feel bad somewhat for this woman who seems like her life has been interrupted because she's now being dragged.
You see how quickly we turned her story into like, let's talk about us rather, you know? That's how we did that classic thing.
I mean, like, her life really has been interrupted because now she's been dragged to a mental hospital for some evaluation.
Oh, no. Well,
she was living her best life, eating grass. She was right next to a river as well. And all she had was a tent and a camp chair, it seems. And that was it.
Oh, no. If it's against her will, and that's
a shame,
then that upsets me. I really wish they'd have left her alone.
Just leave her in the tent.
Well, maybe she did have like mental issues, though.
Just leave her.
Maybe if she did, and if she was really struggling, then yes. But if she was happy, then
she just wanted
leave
to,
her.
She wanted to eat her moss and her grass and live in the canyon. Leave her the fuck alone. What's wrong with people?
She was on the Kate Moss diet.
Yeah, I mean, she must have looked great. Hey, don't forget this weekend is Mother's Day, huh? You know, for those people whose moms are an important part of their life. I mean, if you fucking hate your mom, sure, then don't worry. But if you like her for whatever reason, then you need to remember presents or do something special for Mother's Day. Because I always forget Mother and Father's Days. I'm not good with them, so I'm actually reminding you, because if I don't get a reminder, I'm in trouble. Although I don't think my mother or father would really give a shit, but. But I always feel bad if it happens, and then my brother and sister have remembered and I haven't. That's embarrassing. Maybe.
Well, isn't it sort of the beauty of now having nephews? Because don't the grandkids take over some of that as well?
Not if they're.
No, they do.
Not if they're 5 and 7.
Not if they're little.
Five and seven, they don't even remember their own birthdays. It's like, woo, today's my birthday? Awesome.
No, it can still count.
Well, I mean, Steph, I think, sympathizes with you, Leanne. Steph says, lockdown made me realize I hate crowds. And Eleutheria says, yeah. Oh, yes, shopping is like sport and socializing in one for the older generation. So kind of taking your answer down.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. But also, just to further that point, when I do see people, and it must never be a lot. Mm. So let's say it's a visit to my cousin, her husband and her kid. Then after I've finished doing it, I'm so grateful that I did. And I realize the benefit that I got out of it. So I do see the point.
Well,
that's all.
Yeah, you see, I'm like that. I mean, I'm like that with any event. I've said to you before, I suffer from the opposite of FOMO, and maybe this is the kind of socialization we've discussed on the show before, but long before Corona, I always hate going to things. So I will always say no to every event that I get an invitation to, unless I'm really really sure it's something I'll absolutely love, and. Therefore, I don't have to feel, oh, no, because even if it's something I do want to go to, while I'm getting dressed or while I'm driving to it, I'm like, I should have said no to this, which is ridiculous because I usually have a good time once I'm there. It's like the opposite of FOMO. Yeah. We gave
Absolutely.
It, didn't we give it a name? It's the joy of
JOMO.
Out.
JOMO.
Yeah, joy of missing out. People say to me, you know, like you remember when you used to get, and I still get them occasionally, but you'd get a like 11 o'clock at night phone call from one of your friends or whatever. And you'd be like, I'm not answering that. And then they leave you this voice note or whatever. And they're, hey, man, where are you? We're already drunk. It's so much fun. Why don't you come? And I'm like, nah, it's fine. You're not
yes.
Get off. There's never been an occasion where that's happened where I've gone, yeah, I wish I was there. Man, oh, damn, I'm feeling so left out. This is so horrible. I'm sad and miserable. I'm always like, I'm in bed. You go ahead. No problem. No jealousy. No FOMO. Not one tiny little bit.
I actually remember when I was married, we used to...
Before you were a bitter divorcee.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were in our mid to late 20s, and... Every night of the weekend was a party or a gathering of some sort. And we ended up living in a complex where we had a lot of friends who lived there too. We were friends with them before we moved there. And there were some nights we'd go out and it would reach a point of the night where we'd go out, to one of the other houses. And it would reach a point where I just wanted to go home. I was done for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't let me.
So you
and that feeling has never actually passed. So I would go home and then I would need to actually barricade the door.
Oh my God.
With furniture because they'd come in drunk going, come on, Leanne, come back to the party.
Oh no.
We miss you.
That's very serious though. I mean, like that almost sounds a little bit abusive, you know?
It was horrible, and I still have dreams where I'm trying to sleep, and people are waking me up going, come on, you can't sleep, let's go.
Well, that actually,
your dreams
no, but that actually,
are a little
that actually happened. That actually happened this morning. Sia was trying to wake you up for the show, and you were like, oh, I don't want to wake up. I'm still in a dream.
So your dreams basically alternate between your ex and people trying to force you to party. That's what you dream about on average.
There's a lot more than that, but most are recurring dreams of some kind. Yeah.
And don't forget the Chinese man who licked her face in the lift. She still thinks about him.
Oi, jeez.
Actually, that's one thing I don't have nightmares about. I really dealt with that quite well.
Yeah, you put it out there. Yeah, you've dealt
still
with
an
it.
Emotional issue.
No, it's not. Look, she's fine with it. I promise. Leanne is rock
solid. Leanne, are you?
Yeah. No, I promise I am. I really got over that quite well.
I
wouldn't be able to.
to go back to the woman in the canyon with the moss and the grass that she was eating, Hermine says, if she is found to be sane, she should sue the cuck out of those people and then use the money to buy herself a piece of land where she can live in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But sue for what, though?
Well, they kind of detained her.
Pestering her.
They detained her against her will and institutionalized her against her will. You can't, you know, if you're sane and people do that to you, that's a kind of abuse. Basitsana says, and she's using the correct term here, which I like. She says, I realized that I'm an ambivert during lockdown. Mm. I would never have known otherwise. Ambivert means you're ambivalent between being introverted and extroverted. You're somewhere in the middle, which I think most of us are. I mean, I know in my slightly more manic phases, I'm very much an extrovert and I'm loud and obnoxious and sometimes irritating. That's when I'm at that extreme. And then in the other extreme, you won't even necessarily get a word out of me. I'm just in my thoughts and I'm totally self-contained and I'm almost not even present. So we all vacillate between those two as well. You know, just as we were talking about the social aspect, that's much more of a mood aspect to me. And I think everybody is. I don't think anyone is 100% introvert or 100% extrovert. Do you?
Very rare cases.
I know some very high up there extroverts that would, you know, make me feel like I do nothing at all. I think, yeah, it depends on the time and the mood. I would say I'm an extrovert, but I love a bathroom refuge every now and then. You know, when you have those come to Jesus conversations in the middle of a bathroom, you just need to get away from the party and go, okay, it's fine.
So, yeah, let's just clarify for people who think that you're going to the bathroom to do other dangerous and nefarious things. You're actually talking about a bath, okay? It's very boring. It's not as sexy as you might have thought. Sia goes into the bathroom. He makes a huge, luxurious bubble bath, and that's pretty much him. That's his refuge.
No. That's all.
We don't want it to sound dodgy. All right, I want to talk to a guy called Dr. Reza Mir. He's an innovator, and he's the creator of something called the Pegasus Vertical Business Jet. Now, every couple of days, weeks, months, however long it is for you, we come across somebody that really can be called the coolest person in the world. And today, we're going to talk to the guy who's invented something which, I mean, I wish this is my invention. I wish I'd even got close to inventing a part of this thing. But this sounds like something out of a superhero story. It's like something Batman would have in his cave. It's the first in South African aviation. It's an airplane that will provide true business jet performance coupled with helicopter convenience. Now, doesn't that sound good? Sounds pretty amazing. So,
sounds great.
Well, I know you think it's
a, if you do say so yourself.
I know you're going to say that, Reza, but let me try and explain this to people and then you can fill in the gaps. So, apparently, it's got a wingspan of... I'm hearing myself in someone else's feedback here. It's got a wingspan of 14.8 meters. It can take off and land on any helipad. And it has air fan technology, which can land it on grass. It can land on wooden decks, even on moving surfaces like a yacht, which is absolutely amazing. So that's what? Vertical takeoff and lift.
That's right, yes.
You can seat 7 people in this thing, including the pilot. It has a range of 4,400 kilometers from a runway takeoff and 2,124 from a vertical takeoff. Endurance is 6.6 hours on runway or 3.18 hours in vertical takeoff and lift. That's amazing. Flight speed can get up to 796 kilometers an hour. Now, you're a doctor, right? And by doctor, I mean like a medical doctor.
That's right.
Yeah, there we are. There's Dr. Reza. So Reza, this is amazing. First of all, tell us about your life up to now, and then we'll talk about this business jet in a second. But just tell us what you do. I see all these certificates on the wall behind you. You're obviously a very accomplished man.
Yeah, I like to use that just as a little bit of a prop. But they are real. They're not real. Wallpaper.
Sure, of course.
But, I mean, I had, I guess I would say, an unremarkable childhood growing up.
Where did you grow up?
I studied here in Joburg.
Okay.
I studied medicine at Wits. And then I did an MBA and a master's in finance. And I just kind of became fascinated by learning and knowledge and creating or innovating. And it was something that just kind of stuck with me. And it's not that I did it all at once. So sometimes people think that I did all of these things in one go, which was quite amazing. But it was more over time. Yeah.
I'm going to stop you there because you're being humble about this. I mean, most of us can't even get one degree in a lifetime.
Oh, wow.
Here you're talking about being a medical doctor, yes. MBA, you're studying, you know, you're learning about aviation. Just go slowly here. So what do you do? Are you a GP or are you a specialist? What was it that attracted you to medicine other than the fact that you're obviously naturally quite clever and people said to you, oh, you're so clever, you must become a doctor. Is that what happened to you?
I think that's kind of what happened. I think my parents were kind of like more excited than I was when I started. I didn't know what to study when I finished school.
Yeah.
I just thought it's difficult and I should do it because then it gives me something of value.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, as I progressed through it, I learned to love different aspects of it. And right now I do aesthetic medicine. So botulinum toxins, fillers, I make people look good and keep them
very
healthy
good.
And happy. But I've been expanding more into things like the biologicals, like platelet-rich plasma, stem cells. And quite interestingly, I've been very excited about the potential of using biocompatible filaments to print scaffoldings and seeding them with stem cells to make organs so that people won't need to do organ transplants anymore in the future. But I guess that will be for another show.
Sure, that's phenomenal.
When it comes to the aviation side, you know, I had the idea. I thought from a business perspective, it was great. The more I delved into the aviation manufacturing space, the more excited I was about it to be involved purely from a business space. But then when I thought it needed to be unique, it needed to be something that the world hadn't seen before,
mm-hmm.
it became even more exciting. And that's where the vertical takeoff and landing comes in.
Right.
And really just slowly over time, I've been teaching myself, you know, obviously I do work with engineers, I hire engineers to do the more technical details that almost legally they have to do. But things like I wanted to build or be involved in the building of the full-scale hover demonstrator myself.
Right.
And so I started studying and learning about carbon fiber and different materials and how they work. And just I thought if I had to get my hands involved and be building things myself, I could put my soul into the project in a bigger way. So I keep learning as much as I can, and I wish I could learn more in a day.
This is unbelievable. I mean, I'm always blown away by people who, you know, when I define intelligence, it's about wanting to know more. It's not about necessarily having knowledge. And you definitely have that curiosity in spade loads. But you were talking about how you got engineers to help you because, I mean, you wouldn't let an engineer operate on one of your patients. And similarly, you know, the engineers can't let a doctor come in and perform surgery on an aircraft. But the fact that you have got involved and now you are helping to build certain things, you're helping to design some of the materials, this is probably more exciting for you than anything you've done in medicine because it's so different to everything that you do on a daily basis, right? You can't wait to get back to that machine and add some component, try something, experiment with some new technology. It must be the most exciting thing about your life at the moment.
First of all, I really like the way you talk about me. I think I'll come back to the show more. But, you know, sometimes my friends say to me, you haven't been on a holiday, you need a holiday. And they're right, it would be nice to have a holiday, but
sure.
I do feel that when I'm not working with patients, I'm working on the plane and vice versa. Those are, for me, you know, you're using slightly different parts of your brain, and so it is a bit of a holiday when it comes to shifting between the two. But like I say, the new things about the aesthetic side and medical science are still exciting me in, again, looking at the innovative space. I mean, there's ways that we might be able to use the umbilical cords of people to treat people with coronavirus who are stuck on ventilators. So that's something we're still working on. And obviously, it's active research. But the plane is a different science. It's more physics. I think I more naturally lean towards it. And obviously, it's a way that we can impact the whole world going forward. If you can just imagine using it for combining the two. Let's say you wanted to use it for medical rescue out at sea. You could fly four times the distance, four times the speed of a helicopter. So your footprint of where you can make a difference is much bigger.
Just explain to us what it looks like, because you've built a prototype and you are still you're doing tests. You've actually flown this already, so it's not as if this is all a pipe dream and it's sitting on the ground and it's never going to learn to take off and, you know, you're just messing around. You've built a prototype. You've done test flights. You've been in this. How much do we know about it so far that we can explain to people, especially to those who can't see the picture that we've just put up now?
So basically what I started off with is I said to the engineers that were helping me, I said, let's make it look like a sports car that can fly. I didn't want it to be boring, like a tube in the sky. You know, many planes just look like a pencil with wings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good reason. It's easy to pressurize and it's efficient. But there are ways now with carbon fiber that you can shape it in a way that will still be efficient and be even lighter but can look sexy. And I guess that's where the aesthetics again comes in.
Yeah.
Is psychologically people want to be associated, they want to be inside and they want to fly in things that look good.
Absolutely.
So it does look like that. I think we managed to get that done. And over time, it will also evolve slightly. But what you saw there was a 1/8 scale flying model that we worked on with some engineers in Pretoria to do the hover demonstration and to test what the parameters needed to be. You know, sometimes people look at that and say, isn't that a drone? But the truth is, the layout of the fans is very different. And so you can't get the same, it's not in a square. So you can't balance it with traditional software as easily as it might seem. We're now building 2/4 scale models to send to the UK to do hover demonstration, forward flight, and even some transition. The reason we're sending it there is because we've partnered with a company called Cadden Lanes, mm-hmm. and they do control systems and automation for airplanes. They've done it for the military planes before, but they've given us an exclusive right on the commercial side or the passenger side.
Riza, who's financing this? I mean, this is expensive stuff. None of this stuff happens cheaply, and all of it must be extremely costly, time-consuming. I mean, you've got your own practice. Probably all these engineers have other things to do as well. You're not all just dedicating your spare time to it, so someone has to finance this. Have you guys got backers?
No. Well, so far it's been me. And so I like to say it's the first plane that's ever flown on botulinum toxin and fillers. But we have had a couple of smaller public fundraisings over the past few years, and we've actually done another one right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a share window open now, approved by the CIPC, so it's legal for us to offer it in the public space. And we hope that will be able to move our project forward faster. Again, when it comes to that Cadden Lanes work that we're doing in the UK, the government there has given us a lot of support, you know, including financial incentives. And so for us, it's a very good time to raise that funding, especially now that we've got our patents in the USA, in the UK, and even here. But so that's our funding goal. We do hope that with the work that we're doing now and the full-scale hover demonstration, we'll be able to impress bigger funders. Obviously, it's a project that will need, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars to complete the certification at the FAA and that type of thing. But, you know, the business case does still add up and still very profitable, even at those outlay levels.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it is to show progress and then try to attract further funding
to
move forward as much as we can.
But with all of these models you've built so far, none of them are actually piloted yet, because they're a scale model of what you're going to build eventually. And the idea is that if you can prove that these can do the job, then you can go on to building the actual thing at much greater cost, but with actual practical application. All right, so I'm going to bring in George Meany. George is the CEO of Auto Trader. He joins us every Friday, and he's also he flies. He's a pilot, so he would be fascinated by all of this, and I'm sure he can't wait to talk to you. Hey, George. George, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. How's this plane that Riza's working on? Pretty impressive stuff, huh?
Oh, Amazing, Reese. I think, you know, when somebody starts talking about doing something differently, because that hasn't been done in aviation except for Elon Musk's rockets. You know, everybody's still using the old traditional piston engines and fuel. And, you know, when I was listening in the background making coffee, yeah. and when I heard jet airplane, I like ran to my computer and what is this about? Because, you know, you listen to half
picture.
And
but listen, I mean, this vertical takeoff and lift stuff, I mean, I've been interested, you know, George, I've been talking to you about the originally the Müller Sky car. Now, of course, we've got drones that are able to make this technology a lot more efficient. And what Ries is talking about here is effectively some improvement on that original idea, which I absolutely love. And it would be the sexiest little craft ever if you can get this working. I mean, George, you might even be one of the people who wants to invest up front, you know, who knows?
Well, no. I mean, vertical takeoff and landing. I know nothing compared to what Reese knows. But vertical takeoff and landing. I mean, it comes back from the Harrier days, the days of Russia and England trying to compete with each other in vertical takeoff and landing. So if somebody can get this right, I think it's going to change aviation.
Well, Reza, what's the next step? I mean, where do you guys go? Let's say you get a whole bunch of people interested and you move this into engineering businesses overseas who can help you with some of the components that maybe we can't do here. What sort of timeline are we looking at here? What's your best case scenario for how this might pan out?
So I would say our next step is to, like you say, build manned models and start doing flight testing for certification purposes, so that we can get that stamp of approval that allows us to deliver to, you know, most countries in the world. I think the US FAA is still the biggest market. It's 67% of the jet market. So we have to cater for that. And that's our plan. I think with adequate funding, we should be able to start delivering to people in about 5 years.
Wow. No, that's absolutely amazing. I love it. Well, Reza, listen, congratulations. I mean, what an interesting guy you are. I'm sure that those are not your only interests. I'm sure that there are a whole, you know, long list full of more of these. But at least we know, Leanne, we know where to go if we want to get the sexiest little Batman plane and we want to go for our Botox. We can go to the same guy now.
I'm so glad because I've been looking for something to spend my millions on. So at least now I have a clear direction. Yes. You know, I'm not going to waste my money.
Yes, I think this is the way to go. No, I love it. Reza, well done. This is absolutely awesome, man. Great to meet you and thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you. That's really nice. I appreciate it. I enjoyed the show. If people want to find out more, they can just look us up on Instagram or on our website, Pegasus_UA.
Pegasus_UA. Very good. Reza, nice to see you.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Wow. Isn't that cool? George, I know this stuff is just like you're in my favorite area of interest because the idea of flying has always been the most sexy thing in the universe to many of us. And the idea of building a new vehicle for the purposes of this is even more exciting. If you could land on the grass outside someone's house, and you could land on the deck of a yacht, and you can fly these kinds of distances.
What the sort is going on?
What do you mean?
You want to land outside someone's house?
Sia, imagine if you pick someone up for a date. You and Leanne were talking earlier about how you don't know if you'd be able to go up to some rich, famous person and ask them out on a date. Oh, yes, if you have this thing, you can. Like, I'll pick you up at 6.
Yeah.
You go... I'll pick you up at 6. We'll go out for dinner. She goes, yeah, sure, no problem. I'll be ready at 6. What's your address? And she sends the address, and you check it out on Google Earth. You see that there's a nice patch of grass just a little way down from the house. Bring in your little jet. Land there.
Okay.
Walk up. Come on. Yeah. Tell me that isn't the most sexy thing in the universe.
I didn't think of it like that. I thought you want to, like, drop somewhere and abduct people. No, that I wanted to clarify.
What kind of a psychopath are you? That tells me more about you than it does about
anyone. This is why we clarify things.
Okay? This is why you should never be allowed a pilot's license.
I just see him as a best
man. Oh, and that too. And that too.
I love this. And you know what? What a cool thing for a doctor who's already doing well, who already has a practice that seems to be thriving, that knows his stuff in that field. What a cool thing for him to also become a master of another field. Amazing. All right, George, what do you got for us this morning?
Well, I'm back down to earth, I guess. In Alabama, this always happens in Florida, America.
Alabama.
Some guy, well, actually his name was Tory Gray, was moving a couple of hundred kilometers and driving his truck with a load of his goods on the back, saw the car in front of him swerve. And didn't know what the car swerved for, and he eventually realized that when he had stopped at the next filling station, he hit an owl.
Ooh.
And this owl was stuck in his, I mean, in their terms, Bucky, or well, in our terms, Bucky, in their terms, truck, in his truck's grill for a couple of hundred kilometers.
Oh, my God.
But the strange thing is that the owl was fine. It broke the grill, was sitting against the radiator. He called the conservation services. They came to dislodge the owl, and the owl was actually fine. And it was more, his car was more damaged than the owl.
Jeez.
I'm glad to hear the owl survived, but, you know, this happens because owls often will land on the road in South Africa to pick up something like a rat or a rodent or a rabbit or something that's crossed the road and got hit by a car. And many people have killed owls because they'll land on the road and then, you know, they're easily startled by bright light because they're nocturnal creatures. And also we've got huge numbers of people in this country who are terribly superstitious about owls. And they kill the owls. So we actually should be looking after these animals. I'm very sad to hear that this one was hit by this Bucky, but at least it survived.
Yeah, it survived. It was fine. I sent you a link. You can see the gentleman holding the owl. The owl seems quite calm, actually. I'm glad the owl survived. But, how does an animal get hit at high speed and survive a couple of 100-kilometer journey sitting against the grill of a radiator of a car?
Well, that makes me think of something, and maybe you can help us with this for next week's show, George. What is the perfect vehicle to have if there's a zombie apocalypse? I know you're the right guy. Yeah, I want you to do some research and ask your team because you've got some very sharp people at Auto Trader, and I know you guys can give me the whole spectrum of cars and vehicles and whatever it might be. What kind of vehicle would Leanne and Sia and you and I need if we were going into the zombie apocalypse? I watched that.
I won't miss. I'll come back to you.
I watched that video of that dude who was transporting, I think, cell phones and you know, that video of him being shot at by those hijackers. And he kept driving and he had the guy next to him loading the gun. And, you know, he managed to drive just unbelievably well and kept his cool throughout. And we were all, I think everybody in the country has been talking about him this week. But I thought about him and I thought, like, he would be a great driver during a zombie apocalypse. But what kind of vehicle would be the best thing to give him? So that in those circumstances, he can really live up to his maximum efficiency, capacity, ability.
He needs one of those cars with the wheels that rotate all the way around so that you can drive sideways as well.
Don't all wheels rotate all the way around?
No.
That's what I was thinking.
Doesn't the wheels of us go round and round?
No. So imagine... They're not on an axis. They're suspended in another way, and they can pivot so that you can drive left or right, like straight into a parallel parking.
You know that Mercedes, I think it's Mercedes-Benz, have this technology on their higher-end car, where the rear wheel turns. The front wheels turn like front wheels turn, but the rear wheel turns slightly to help the car around a corner or turn. But I know what you mean. So you can parallel park quite easily.
But they don't
change direction when the hijackers or the zombies are there.
So, I mean, if the car's like this, the wheel's got to be perpendicular to it. Leanne is saying that she actually wants a wheel that can, like, you know, they can all in sync, they can all sort of lean, basically.
No, I'm trying to explain it. It's so hard.
You know, Reza, Dr. Reza Mia was saying to me he's really been looking for an engineer, and he was thinking about you, and then he was so sure that you were the one, Leanne. And now after listening to you for the last 2 seconds, he's like, nah, not that bitch.
Okay, just quickly, I need to get this off my chest.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so imagine two cars against a pavement.
What?
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
I sent you a link with an example.
All right. Go on, Leanne. Just describe it the way you want to.
So, okay. Imagine you're looking from a drone. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're looking from an aerial point of view.
Right.
And you can see next to the pavement are two cars. Mm-hmm. And there's a parking spot between them that you want to get into.
A parallel park.
Just in front of the restaurant, a parallel spot.
Okay.
So imagine driving up to that spot so that you are right next to the spot. You're not forward next to the other car or back next to the other car.
Right.
You're directly next to the open spot. Mm-hmm. Your wheels rotate. They spin around, and then you can just move to the right or the left to get into that spot.
Your wheels will turn perpendicular.
Oh, fuck off.
No, I'm trying to explain it to them. They will turn.
I know Leanne.
Yeah, I know too. I mean, she's basically saying you just slide into the parking because
Oh my God.
She's so aggressive today.
Is it worth it for you, Leanne? It took 40,000 years to convey that.
And actually, we all
Do you know what I'm talking about, Thea?
We all understood from the start. We knew what you meant.
Oh, did you?
Yes, we were just giving you shit.
Well, then my job here is done.
No.
I just wanted to see how far this would go and how annoyed you'd be.
All right, so I just want to go back to George because that's actually why we're here at this point.
Yes.
So, George, given you an assignment for next week with the zombie apocalypse, but go on with your agenda for the day. Let's hear what else you've got on your list of things.
I sent you a photograph.
Yes, there it is.
There we go. a car salesman... obviously in the United States, selling Fiat Chrysler automobiles has been, for the last 9 years, collecting bonuses for selling Fiat Chryslers to the tune of about 9.9 million rand, which means he's collected bonuses of about 1 million rand a year by giving customers discounts. So here's how the thing worked. Customer would walk in, any customer, not necessarily a relation to him. He would offer the customer a 5% discount, and how he would apply the discount was he would tell the customer to say that they were a relative of an employee of Fiat Chrysler.
Okay.
And in so doing, get the discount. I mean, employees get discounts at retail stores, and with your family, you might be able to benefit from that. But this was fake. So he apparently sold over 250 cars in January 2020 alone on this basis, and has collected 9.9 million rand over the last 9 years. But how he was caught was interesting, because employees in the business started to see that people were applying for discounts on their names.
Mm-hmm.
And so the federal agents arrested him on April the 30th, and he's posted bail, but his hearing is set for next month, May.
Because nobody's family can be that big, right? There's not that many people who can have a relative discount.
A relative discount, exactly. you think to yourself, how many times does that actually happen in other scenarios? You know, you go and you buy something, you've got a friend that can get a discount because his or her is working there. I think this happens in real life all the time.
Oh, especially in South Africa. I mean, these days, if you have a friend who's in the ANC, you can get a government job. You just have to say, this is my friend. And you end up Director General of Home Affairs before you can click your fingers. It's fantastic. It's called nepotism.
Good point.
And it is such a big win in this country of ours. It's just the best.
Well, I hope he gets nabbed for it because you can't have that big a family, as you say. But getting on to the actual local economy, we're unfortunately seeing higher and higher car prices. I think we predicted this about 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Consumers aren't buying new cars anymore.
Yeah.
Well, they are buying new cars, but they're buying less of them. It turns out that we are going to see about an 8 to 9%, or we're busy seeing an 8 to 9% increase in new car prices. But that's not the challenge, because as volumes drop, average prices go up. Used car prices are starting to rise. We're going up from the mid 1% in used car prices in terms of price increases to the mid 3 to 4%. And I think this is as a result of demand on used cars. People aren't buying new, they're buying used. And there's a lack of stock in the country. But it translates into another problem.
Yeah.
We've seen exports increase in the first quarter of this year by 4% versus last year. So 60% of the vehicles we make in this country are exported. We've seen an increase of 4%. I keep saying that we are going to lose our export industry if we don't move to EVs.
Yeah, I mean, you've warned about this. And do we build any electric vehicles here?
No. So that's the big problem. Mm-hmm. Is we need to retool our manufacturing plants. Now, the OEMs are all over it. It's not like they're not doing anything. The trouble is it's expensive, and the margins on cars are thin. If you can buy a 500,000 rand car or a 1 million rand car, it's not like the manufacturer or the dealer is making 250,000 rand. That's not
right.
The case. The margins are very thin. But to retool these plants is very expensive. Often puts the OEM into a loss-making scenario. So government has to come to parts.
Yeah.
The encouraging thing.
George, do you really think government are the people who are going to make this happen? Or do you think private industry will just catch on and go, okay, listen, guys, if we want to stay in business, we better start building these instead of those?
No, that's already the case. I think that OEMs are, they're my customers. They are on the bandwagon. Yeah.
Good.
It's just really difficult to transition a business. And at the end of the day, more than likely, OEMs might take the hit, in order to transition their businesses. But government can make it a lot easier by reducing import taxes as well as incentivizing consumers. Can you imagine incentivizing companies giving employees company cars with zero tax in 5 years?
I can totally imagine that. I also think that ultimately we're going to move in that direction, but it's going to take a while. I think we're really at the back of that curve. I don't think we're at the front.
But we've got a drop dead date, and that's 2030 to 2035. England says no more ICE vehicle sales from 2030, and Europe is somewhere in the region of 2035. So we don't have a lot of time.
But that doesn't mean people aren't still going to drive those ICE vehicles. They're still going to be out there. They're still going to be on the road. It's just going to be very difficult to find parts. It's going to become increasingly difficult for people who do want to buy them to find them, anywhere except on Auto Trader, obviously. But this is exciting, George. I'm happy about this. I think it's a good development. There's going to be more competition. There's going to be some really interesting innovation. I don't think anyone's going to look back except the serious petrol head car fanatics and go, oh, we've lost something. I think they're going to go, I want an ICE vehicle because it's going to be so much more modern and easy to use and fuel efficient and it'll be able to do things that ordinary cars now can't. So I'm happy for this. I think it's good.
No, it's a very good thing. But I'm going to keep bleating about this until we start to see the curve changing, because EV sales globally has grown by 41% in the last year.
Sure.
Global.
That's quite something.
We're not talking about South African sales, which is a very low number, but 41%. And for the first time, Europe grew faster than China.
Very good. Very, very good. All right. What else we got?
That's it.
Beat
it on about
That's it. Leanne, do you want to explain any other complicated engineering to us before we go?
No, I've learnt my lesson. Keeping quiet. There's the car, by the way.
Becoming an EV.
All right, Leanne.
Do with it what you will.
All right, thank you, Leanne. Very good. She's so angry. Here's the car. Look at this horrible fucking car that Leanne...
They'll actually need their whole weekend to get back to dealing with us.
There's the car. Leanne wants us all to drive one of those. That's what she wants. All right. Everybody
Are we done? I need a break from you all.
Yeah, all right. You got 2 whole days to recover from us.
2-day break, yeah.
And we'll see you on Monday at 6 o'clock. George, thanks very much. Sia, thanks very much. Most importantly, thank you to you. And Leanne Moll will be rested and ready to take it on, all of it, all the nonsense, on Monday morning at 6. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.